Hi there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. We hope you enjoy the show.
Everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Colleen.
Hi, Colleen. Thanks for joining us. Unfortunately, Dan is unable to join us today, and so Colleen graciously agreed to come in last minute and have a chat with me today on Wandering DMs. So thank you, Colleen. Welcome.
Yay. I'm glad to be here.
Excellent.
Hi, Paul.
So Colleen and I just kicked off last Thursday our new actual play game, 10 Dead Rats. And so we thought we would talk about that a little bit here, maybe talk about the system, maybe talk about the differences between live streaming versus playing at the table. If any folks have any questions for us in the chat, please fire away, because we'd love to hear from you. What'd you think, Colleen? How was the experience of playing in 10 Dead Rats?
It was super fun and quirky and wacky. First of all, when we started making our characters, the system forces, well, it doesn't force you, but you have good incentivizing rules around being random when rolling all of your stats, including your race and your class.
Yeah, that's so for those who haven't or aren't plugged in, 10 Dead Rats is set in the Warhammer world. And I've run a bunch of Warhammer games before in Warhammer Fantasy 1st Edition, 2nd Edition. Never played third. Actually, I played third once, and then the more recent 4th edition version of the game. The XP bribes are something I totally stole from the 4th edition game. I lost track of myself there. What we're actually playing is a custom set of rules that I wrote. It's based off of somebody else's custom set of rules called Small But Vicious Dog, but the idea is to sort of mash up old school D&D and Warhammer to try and arrive at something that's much lighter than the published Warhammer Fantasy games, much more. What I keep saying is trying to get the rules out of the way so we can focus on the setting and the characters.
Yes, it's all very custom. In fact, yep. Paul changes the rules sometimes,
yes,
right before the stream.
I am blessed by very forgiving players who are willing to play a totally unplay-tested system, which I am tuning as we go. So if you're interested in watching a brand new system get tuned on the fly, 10 Dead Rats is a good example of that. Our stream is the first ever playtest of those rules.
Yeah, and just after the first session, you decided to change some things about like how the rogue class works, right?
That's right. That's right. Actually, I was going to make an announcement about that at the start of session 2. It's already posted on my blog, but I gave a little extra free stuff to academics and rogues because they were feeling a little underpowered. One of the readers of my blog also mentioned this feeling the same way. So, although really, ultimately, what I was getting at, what I realized was I'm running some content. Let me make a spoiler announcement. We will probably spoil stuff from the first episode in this discussion. I will try very hard not to spoil any stuff down the road, especially since Colleen is one of my players, and I don't want to spoil the game for her.
Please don't spoil things for me, Paul. No. What are you doing?
But as you guys know, I am using a bunch of content from the classic campaign, The Enemy Within, and sort of hanging stuff off that. Now, our game is set up that the players have a lot of power to drive the direction of the story, so The Enemy Within will sort of be our de facto plot that happens when the players aren't pushing it somewhere else, but if the players start pushing it somewhere else, who knows where it'll go. Why did
Us
I say all
pushing
that, Colleen?
It somewhere else?
What's that?
Because we were talking about how you change the rules on the fly sometimes,
yes,
and
yes,
you were talking about the rogues.
Right, right.
And you, the content.
I realized after last night's session, I have all these handouts to start giving you guys, much of which is written material. And I went, oh no, none of them can read. Oh,
we're all very dumb.
I screwed up. So academics will be getting the read write talent for free.
Yes, we were rolling our dice and just you have to go down the line rolling your 3d6s and taking in your stats, and I think everybody got to intelligence and didn't do well, except for maybe Christian's character.
Christian's dice were on fire, and Fury's dice were just killing her. Yeah. Yeah, Christian's got like 2 17s, I think, in there, and I think Fury has several eights. Yeah.
He's the popular kid at prom.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which is really interesting when we're all playing, because you can kind of rely on his character to pick up the slack, because we're all just kind of a bunch of misfits. I mean, we get into this ship, and they leave the two rogues alone with a box, so naturally we're going to break it open.
Yep.
That was the best part. I was a little worried for a little while that we were never going to sneak into things. Oh, yeah, the two-syllable thing.
Oh, yes, yes. User William is telling us the two-syllable thing was amusing. Honestly, actually, it's something. That's another thing I intend to tune. I agree it's amusing, but I also think it may be just flat-out too restrictive. So I'm just changing the language to be a little more vague about how you have limited vocabulary without making it a hard rule about syllables. What did you think, Colleen? How hard was it to do two-syllable?
I think it's definitely a test. So you start thinking about it more than what your character's doing sometimes. So like it tripped Fury and I up because we would say horrible and then go, wait, no.
No, that's too slow. Yeah.
Or delicious. Yeah. No, can't use delicious. Have to use tasty.
Well, I think the thing that really got me was the fact that Fury was telling me she can't say her own name because it's three syllables. I was like, oh, that doesn't feel good. She should.
Yeah, we had interesting discussions about how she can't say her own name, and I can't take a second language, so I only know Common. I don't know Dwarven, which I'm a dwarf.
That I like, honestly. So that's we saw a little bit of that in my birthday game where the players made all elves. And several of them had low ints, and so only could know one language, and they all chose Elven, which made the whole game go in this weird direction, because you have this whole party of elves, some of whom can't even talk to the locals. I thought that was super fun. And when Fury... Sorry, go on.
No, I definitely enjoy it in the birthday game, because I got to play this year as Rose, and I was married to one of the elves who can't speak Common. Yeah. And I don't speak Elven, so we're married, and well, we... We're kind of married.
We're married,
but the elf doesn't know.
Yep.
And it's fantastic.
There's a really nice tension there. So Fury was asking about how that works, how you have a dwarf who doesn't know how to speak Dwarven. And my interpretation, and I don't, you know, you can agree or disagree with this, Colleen, to your character, but my interpretation was sort of like you're second generation, right? You were born of dwarves, but in an empire town, so you just never really picked up the homeland language because you're so used to being surrounded by people who speak the human language of Reichspiel.
Yeah, I believe that's what we agreed on, and frankly, with Yeffie's character, she kind of takes the easy road anyway.
Yes.
To get her way.
Yeah.
So she's like, ah, that's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that will be a thing that comes up later in the show. if we get some opportunity to meet some dwarves, maybe they will be insulted that you're not able to speak Dwarven. That'd be funny.
Yeah, the low int sometimes seems like a terrible, terrible detriment.
Yeah, I feel like I tried really hard. So in D&D, in straight D&D, one of the things I tell people, especially who are new to the older editions, is that it feels weird how low your stats are because you're rolling 3d6 rather than like 46 drop the lowest or point by or whatever the kids are doing these days. but I also think they're far less important, especially in D&D where in old school D&D there's no skill system at all. You almost never make ability checks. They're kind of meaningless, right? You can play an int 10 wizard and have no real detriment.
Right.
Now in this game, because we focus so much more on social activity and sort of not combat stuff and not dungeon exploration, I think the ability checks come up much more. So I'm a little worried, honestly, that maybe they're a little more important in those, and so Fury's going to get frustrated that her character is hindered. I hope not.
I know that she talked about, I know I talked to, for her, but she talked a little bit about being the straight man. And that her character definitely is not the straight man that should be the straight man, seeing how she kind of worships the sea and fish.
I mean, and her dumping her alcohol out on the floor and like throwing her gold coin into the river. She's not a straight man.
No.
If anything, I think that falls to Christian.
Yes, I think he's going to get dumped with it.
Yeah, sorry, Christian.
Especially when he comes downstairs and we're all covered in dirt. And he's like, what just happened? I don't know. Box opened itself.
Yeah. I'm actually really excited for episode two to just open with the group sitting around that table in the mess and being like, all right, let's talk about what happened.
Yeah. This is one of the only games I've really had to cram in this much content in 2 hours.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So usually, like, in most games I sit around the table, that first hour or an hour and a half is just build up to the plot, or you're getting kind of settled in with each other's characters and you're getting to know each other. Because we only had 2 hours, we had to kind of speedline that.
Mm-hmm.
And start to really flow and get to some kind of event or action or conflict that would then tie us all together super fast.
2 hours feels super short. And the funny thing is, you know, I've been running these 2-hour games at conventions called Boss Fight for Breakfast, which I invented specifically to fit a 2-hour slot because of the way conventions work. And I don't want to get up at 8 a.m. So like, I was like, how do I fit a game in between like when I finally drag myself out of bed and before lunch? And so I came up with this Boss Fight for Breakfast game. But that game is totally different, right? That focus is 100% on combat and tactics and has nothing to do with like what we're doing here. The reason we're doing 2 hours, honestly, is because of some panels I sat in at PAX Unplugged where I actually heard, you know, viewers of streaming say that that's what they wanted. They wanted 2-hour shows. And that makes sense to me, I guess, as a podcast listener. I'm like, yeah, I'm still struggling to catch up on Critical Role. Those four hour episodes, those are long, man. That's a lot of listening,
yeah, totally.
Right? They're up like episode 90, and I'm like, oh god, there's so much. I want to hear it, but it's so much. So I don't know. What do you think? Is it difficult? Is it?
I think it's doable.
Yeah.
I worry that some of our episodes might be lacking in some action. But we might have just some really good role play, and if people are digging that and they like it, then that's great. It will be definitely fun for us. Yeah. We'll have a great time because we definitely have some interesting characters and different interesting character quirks. So the system, you have to have personal ambitions, and then you have party ambitions. Mm-hmm. So the personal ambitions are definitely interesting. Like one of Yeffie's is to hawk all the stuff that she stole from her family. So that's going to, you know, that's obviously started to come up and get nipper in the butt.
Yep.
But yeah, I think 2 hours will be okay. It'll be a short little adventure.
I think that's why I like the idea of doing this in the Warhammer setting. Because generally my assumption in the Warhammer setting is that the players are going to be consistently in over their heads. So, like, you guys should be trying really hard to avoid any kind of combat encounters ever because... You're screwed, right? So it's really all about, you know, a bunch of knuckleheads trying to, you know, trying to do their best and then avoid combat. And so that's going to be more socializing, more character play, more story. Mm-hmm. Which again, and then that's why we come in with the ambition system. Also a thing, actually, I stole from 4th edition Warhammer Fantasy. They do it as bonuses, so you get bonus XP for fulfilling your ambitions. And I said, let's just hang the whole thing off that. That's the only way you get XP is by having ambitions and fulfilling them.
William had another question.
Yeah.
If we've played before. We've all played together, but not all at the same time.
Yeah, this specific group has never played together, but I think we've all played with some subset of each other.
Right, so Fury and I have played in a game together, The Fall of Magic. And then, which is a great game.
Oh, you guys played Fall of Magic together? That's awesome. I love that game.
Yeah, I think, weren't you there? I'm pretty sure you were there.
Wasn't that with the Clarksons?
With Woods?
Oh, Fall of Magic. No, that's right, no. That's right. Yeah, no, we played it at the office. Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, left an imprint on you. That's good.
Ooh,
that's great.
Yeah, had to rack my brain. Sorry, my head immediately went to another Fall of Magic game that you and I played together. Okay, yep. But yes, you're right. Yeah, we've played Fall of Magic together with Fury. Fury was also in my my West Marches game. So I got to play a bunch with her there. And then, of course, Max and Christian are my brothers, so I've played with them a lot. And then you got to play with them. Was that the first time you played with them at my birthday?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I got to play at HelgaCon.
Okay.
I got to play with Christian in Strahd Must Die.
Yep. Yep.
Which we started role playing and then we're told to stop role playing. Which.
An unusual
was
choice.
Not the best.
That's yeah, honestly. I find that to be an interesting aspect of playing and running a live stream game versus, say, running just a normal game at the table. My inclination at the table usually is to just barge in and push things forward. And I find a lot more on the stream when two people are talking and having an interesting conversation. I'm really like biting my tongue and holding myself back and just sort of like, let them go, but give them their time, let them explore. There's no rush. So that's,
you know, if you let us go long enough, we'll make some kind of conflict happen,
yeah,
or some action happen.
Well, that's honestly one of the wonderful parts of this particular cast is that I know all of my players will invent and push the story forward and try really hard to cooperatively build something. So I'm very excited about that, honestly.
Christian and Max and I also played in the Stilton game, HelgaCon.
Right.
Yes.
So, and that was a 4th edition Warhammer game. That was my first time actually running 4th edition. And what I found is I was running in a convention, standard 4-hour convention block. And when we started playing, that was the point where I decided 4th edition was too complex, because I was like literally just chopping rules out as we played. It's like, oh God, they're never going to get... You know what? I think it was at the beginning of that game, we just went around the table. I was just like, everybody introduce your characters. And that took like 15 minutes because everybody started role-playing with each other so much. I was like, oh no, this game's in trouble. This is going to be
awesome. What are you talking about?
No. It was totally awesome. But it was one of those ones where I was like, no, it's... Eh.
It soon became a match of who could come up with the best accent or voice for their character and then who could have the worst background. Like, why was my childhood worse than your childhood?
Right.
Yeah. Good times.
So that was a Warhammer 4th edition, and I ran the adventure Something Stinks in Stilton, which was originally written for Lamentations of the Flame Princess. I'm running that one again at TotalCon, I think just using OD&D, so that'll be interesting.
Spoiler alert, he brings cheese. Eat the cheese. It's delicious.
The cheese is a great adventure, and I can't, after reading it, I was like, how can you not bring cheese? You have to bring cheese to this adventure.
I think the best thing for me was no one at the table except for me liked blue cheese. So I was just like, oh, I can't get enough of the cheese. It's so good. So that's, I think, a big difference about the streaming and the table play is that you can kind of have these side conversations when you're actually at the table with someone. But because you're streaming, you don't want to talk over people or interrupt the feed or the audio.
Yep.
So you kind of have to sit back and go, oh, I can't have that side conversation or mention the small tidbit of information to my friend.
I feel like I heard Travis Willingham of Critical Role say something similar, where like he found that not only do you have to be quiet, but you have to pay attention, right? You can't just like zone out and, you know, look at your phone or whatever. Like, he's like, actually, it's important that you pay attention and listen to what the others are saying.
Yeah, especially because if you aren't paying attention and then someone brings up a fact and you were zoned out or you were like doing a doodle, that information is going to come back up. And then you asking questions about it just slows the stream down.
Right.
And you're like, great, now all the listeners have to listen like to the explanation again.
Right. I mean, that's the big difference, right, of a streamed game versus a table game, is being just constantly being sort of aware of like other people are watching this and therefore I really have to do my best to make it fun for them, too. Right? I mean, because I'm always used to trying to make it fun for the people at my table, but then also thinking about the audiences. Yeah, yeah, it definitely affects the game a little bit. I mean, hopefully not in a bad way. I hope not. I guess we'll see.
See? But yeah, I think that's one really big thing, is that you always have to pay attention to what people are saying, and you can't interrupt it with like, oh, and then... this other side question or out of game chit chat that often happens at a table while someone else is having a scene or something else is going on. the whole paying attention stuff comes up in improv as well, where you have to super pay attention to someone in your scene, because they might throw something at you, and you have to instantly react and be aware of who they are, what the conditions of the scene is, what the context is, and roll with it.
For those who don't know, Colleen has a pretty strong background in improv comedy. Has done some, has performed comedy locally here in the Boston area. That's something you and I think talk about a lot, right? Is sort of how improv affects gameplay. What sort of improv things do we bring? Can we bring? Into gaming.
It pretty much teaches you how to play well with others and how to pay attention to other people. So as a player, if you're more aware of what your fellow scene mates want out of a scene or their expectations are, it's much easier for you to interject actions that will help move that those goals along, and then everybody has fun because you're now building a story together.
Yeah.
And paying it like, and because you're giving that attention to them.
That's really nice. I mean, that feeds into a lot of stuff I've talked about on the show before about like the separation of player and character, right? That's sort of like enjoying the game on two different levels, both enjoying the game on the level of I'm portraying this character, but then enjoying it as a, like, you know, participant in the writer's room of the group making a story collectively, they can fight against each other, right? This could be like pulling in completely opposite directions.
Like, we didn't plan on it, but having the two rogues be in the lineup next to each other, to do the watch was brilliant. It was a good move. We didn't plan that. I don't think anyone was actually really paying attention to it. But I was very much paying attention to like what Max was saying and how his character had a crowbar. So that when I could come down, I'd be like, oh, if only we had a crowbar.
Right.
And he's like, oh, I have a crowbar.
I mean, for what it's worth, Max's character is technically not a rogue. He is just a very self-interested person. but yeah, I'm really glad actually that you guys set that up to have that moment together, because we did a sort of session zero where we all called in and made our characters, which was not streamed, and we sort of talked about how we were going to start the game. And when you made your characters, you guys kind of formed these sort of little two subgroups, right? You have Max and Christian, who both belong to this mercenary company, and then Colleen, you and Fury had a little moment, almost a little roleplay moment during our character creation where you sort of decided that you met on the street and that you sold some piece of junk to Fury.
I did.
Yeah.
I sold some junk and she wanted to destroy it with her zealot hatred.
Yeah.
And then we were friends somehow based on that.
Yeah.
I asked her to carry me around in her backpack.
That was so that was really nice. And so we had these two groups, but then as I was contemplating how to start the first session, I had to figure out like, how do I tie these two groups together? Right. And so that was a little challenging for me, especially in terms of like, one of the things I was worried about is like, they're just going to be these two weird cliques and they're never going to meld into a group of four. So I was very glad to see you and Max have that scene together. So maybe your two characters can form that bridge.
Even before then, so Fury also has some improv and acting experience as well. So even before that, when you set up, you might need someone else who can carry something heavy. I think just by saying that, Fury had enough to go off of, I'm going to carry my big giant backpack with a dwarf in it in front of the window so they can see that I'm lugging this huge thing.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, they picked up on that and said, okay, that's how we're going to tie it together.
I mean, I sort of, that was the way it was going to go in my head, right? Where I thought like, they have to carry this giant heavy box and it's Max and Christian, one of whom's a halfling. Like, there's no way they can carry it with just the two of them. And we had like a whole setup earlier scene of Fury like lugging around this you know, you in a backpack.
Yeah.
felt very natural. And then when I set up that scene, I thought, I hope they pick up on this. And you guys were like on it, like in a second, you were just like, yep, hire those people, get out there and go get them. I was like, yes.
Well, there's a tool in improv that's called scene painting, where the people on the sidelines of the scene will just call out things that are also relevant to the scene to help bring the rest of the environment to life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what happened there. We just simply put all those pieces together and said, oh yeah, what this scene needs now is someone obviously lugging something heavy,
yeah,
which would be Fury.
So Exit Sanity asks, on reflecting on the first episode, do we have any new sights into the characters or the settings? One of the interesting things about the setting, I think, is that you all, as a group, have sort of different levels of background in dealing with the Warhammer fantasy setting, right? I'm pretty sure. I know, for example, that Max has run Warhammer Fantasy many times in the past, and so probably knows a lot of the lore. And I get the feeling that, you and Fury have done that less.
Yes. Well, I definitely have. I mean, I read the engineering, Dwarf Engineering Guild stuff that you sent me. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's more about discovering the setting through play.
Yes.
Excellent. With you guys. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was something I had said to Fury when she was asking a lot of questions over over our chat in between sessions after she made her character. I sent her a lot of info. Every time she asked a question, I would be like, here's this background. Here's this piece of background info. And one of the things I mentioned was like that's one of the sort of the tenets of old school, right? Or in my mind, it's one of the tenets of old school of letting the game define your character more than coming to the game with a predefined character and expecting that to, you know, direct the game. So in that vein, how do you think Yeffie was further defined by the first episode, if at all?
Well, I mean, I think I had some dealings with some NPCs, but definitely with the PCs. Mm. I kind of learned that some people are distrusting of dwarves right away. So I kind of upped the creepy notch a little bit, making people uncomfortable with being a dwarf.
Well, and being a weird contortionist, I think super helps that.
I think I saw someone, they were chatting about the stream afterwards, and they said they likened Yeffie to creepy Baby Yoda.
Okay.
The Mandalorian, like they just carry me around in a sack and I come out and knife people or whatever. Which, that's my ambition. That's my goal.
To jump out of a sack and kill someone? shank someone from the backpack?
I've got you now.
It's great.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fun. But no, I mean, like, back to that the intelligence modifier, that kind of ruled the roost of who was calling the shots in the group. Mm. So that had a big bearing on the setting. We initially, and I wish I was in those scenes, I'm sure they'll come up again, but the mutation stuff happened right off the bat with that guy with the weird growth, like, pimple. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
That was super gross. And the way you described it, I just was like, why did I eat that bowl of mac and cheese before the stream? Like, it was so gross. Like, those descriptions were really solid. And then, Max just stabbing it. Learning that this world that we're in is very dark.
Yeah.
And there's going to be these kind of gross, disgusting horrors in it. I'm very excited.
Yeah, that should... I was trying to lay as much foreshadowing into that first episode without really going there completely. We will certainly get into a lot more of that as the game progresses.
Well, the other struggle, it's not really a struggle, but a difference between D&D and Warhammer so far is that D&D right now, especially in 5th edition, you're kind of set up to be this superhuman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are this hero right off the bat. Where in Warhammer, I feel like I'm a cheesemonger or like I'm a guy who cleans my toenails and then there's a vampire or whatever and I have to face it. So I'm forced to become heroic through those means or I'm going to die, right? I'm a very simple person to begin with and we're all very simple in general.
I think that's actually an old school thing. If you check out Matt Finch, one of the authors of... Swords and Wizardry wrote a free booklet called the Old School Primer, and one of the things he says in his thing, he gives a superhero analogy. He says in like newer games, you're Superman. In old school games, you're Batman, right? You don't have any amazing powers. You have some cool stuff, some gear that helps you do cool things, but you're not like you don't have crazy weirdo powers. And furthermore, specifically in old school, you're not even really starting as Batman. You aspire to become Batman, right? That's your
right.
That's the ends. The end of the campaign is you get to be Batman. Yeah,
yeah, totally.
I really like that. I like that arc. Honestly, I feel like You know, another place where I see that done really well is I always think of, honestly, the first Star Wars movie, right? Where Luke is really just a punk at the beginning, right? He's a freaking farmer. And you get that kind of like growth into a hero so that by the time, you know, by Empire Strikes Back, right? He's not Empire Strikes Back, by, Star Wars lore is falling out of my head. No, it is Empire, right? In Empire, yeah, that's when he shows up that's when he starts calling himself a Jedi, right? I think in Empire.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm rambling. Point
is, it's all good.
I enjoy that progression for characters. I want to see them grow from, like, you know, a podunk nobody to someone who's pretty good, but is not, like, some amazing superhuman creature.
Yeah. Fred here has a good question.
Fred is asking about, it's a little hard to follow the mechanics. I mean, that's really interesting. Honestly, I've heard a lot that this is one of the benefits of streaming, is that it is adding more transparency to mechanics. The theory is that this is why, like, 5th edition D&D is becoming so popular in mainstream culture, is that that all the streamers have made it much easier for people to figure out what is roleplay, right? Somebody who doesn't know anything about D&D can go watch a stream and, you know, kind of figure out what the heck the game's all about. In this case, right, we're using a custom set of rules. You can get those rules for free on my blog. Go download them and check them out if you're interested in that. But for sure, like, I think this came up in a couple of episodes ago of Wandering DMs. The question was, am I going to teach the rules? And my aim is to not, like, chew up time, like, addressing the audience and saying, and here's how this works, and here's how this works. And my hope is that just through us playing, that those conversations will come up naturally between me and the players, and that will come out.
I can promise you, Fred, that I will ask lots of questions about the rules when they come up. Like, there's even a roll. So I just rolled terrible this game. I rolled threes and twos most of the time. But I do tend to ask, like, oh, am I adding my bonus or am I adding my base stat?
It doesn't help that I changed that, like, moments before the first episode. Sorry.
We can try to talk about what we're rolling exactly, or at least I can on my end, just to be clear.
I can, just real quick, since we're here and talking about it, one of the big things going on here is, anybody who's read my blog knows that actually I kind of dislike skill systems. I don't like players feeling, you know, shoehorned into this list of things they can do and ergo all the other things they can't do. So one thing I've been trying to convince my players of in general is, like, you can try anything. Yes, there is a talent called skill, and especially rogues have a bunch of them, but that's meant to be, like, bonus extra. You're really good at this. Doesn't mean if you don't have it, you can't do it. So that really means that most things, anytime I'm like, oh, there's a chance of success or failure, I'm going to boil it down to one of the six primary characteristics and say, make a blah, blah, blah test. So, for example, if Colleen wants to leap out of her sack and shiv a guy, maybe not shiv a guy, that sounds like an attack. She wants to hide in her backpack and not be seen by somebody. I might say something like, oh, give me an agility test. And then it's up to Colleen to say, oh, but I'm a contortionist. Can I use this? Do I get a bonus for that skill? Or I have a hide skill or whatever it is. And then I will say, oh, yeah, sure, you can have that extra bonus to your roll. That's the gist. It's the gist of those characteristic tests.
Right now we don't have a whole lot on our sheet. We have one talent. So the whole negotiations are very slim pickings, unless you make something up story-wise. Like, oh, well, so for example, my character's background, my family is really well-known in the engineering guild. So that's how when that symbol came up in the very beginning, I said, oh, shit, because I knew that the symbol was going to cause problems with me because it's associated with my family. Mm-hmm. Because you guys didn't see character creation, you didn't get to see me going on and on about that. So that was probably not as transparent to the viewers.
Yeah, I think that's one thing. One of the problems of having not streamed our character creation session is that we need to make sure that we're bringing whatever decisions were made or stuff that was invented from that session forward and re-explaining it to the audience.
Paul, do you post our character sheets?
You know, that's actually a really good idea. I haven't, but I certainly could. If folks are interested in that, I could certainly post the character sheet so everyone can see some examples. It's actually a great idea. I should do that.
Yay!
Yeah.
And then you can play along with us.
Yeah, I'll post those to my blog, and everybody can, as some working examples of the character sheet, so folks can see what we're working with. Good idea.
Yeah.
What do you think, Colleen? Is there anything else we can do to make the system a little more transparent? Are there other elements?
I mean, I guess for the first couple of sessions, just even though, you know, I know Max and Christian are a little bit more used to the system, you could just bring up, like, okay, well, this will be an agility test or an AG test, and so add your bonus, make sure you add your bonus to the roll, and just be a little bit, I don't know, just like we've never played the system.
Yeah, yeah, just try to say some of the numbers out loud more. Yeah, we could try to do that. I could try to sort of encourage folks to be like, you know, a little more. You know, somebody once asked me, are you going to show the dice rolls? And the interesting thing is I've watched a bunch of streams and I've only seen one stream that shows the dice rolls. And that is actually Acquisitions Incorporated. And that's super cool. I love that they do it. And then they have these like separate cameras that are pointed at their dice trays and they use the large size dice so that you can really see them and read them on screen. And I love the effect, right? Like when someone rolls a 20 and everyone gets up and jumps excitedly, it's more impactful when you can see the die roll and the 20 come up, right? Really though, I we're not doing it, and I suspect most streams don't do it just because of the technical difficulty of setting that up, right? You need a whole other, every person's got to have a separate set of cameras pointed at their dice. It's a whole thing. I would love to do it, but I don't see it happening for us.
Yeah, I think that would be a little difficult, just to set up the dice and then having to switch between the cameras. I mean, I know a lot of other live streams have an actual production end where they have people who you never see who are controlling cameras, controlling shots.
Yep.
We don't have that.
Yeah, that's honestly, that's a good point, right? I have to do all that stuff myself in addition to running the game. So, I am our crew. So whatever I can do to simplify that so that it doesn't, you know, eat up any piece of my brain bandwidth so I can just focus on running the game is good. I don't know. Maybe someday, if somehow we make millions of dollars, making millions of dollars.
I guess the difference is when you roll a number saying what your end success is versus saying, like, I rolled a 9, that's plus 1, I have a 10.
I also am trying to be a little more forthright in saying what the target number is. So generally, when we do tests, there's a range of target numbers, which are just easy, normal, and hard, which are 10, 15, and 20. So usually I'm going with 15 because it's in the middle. And so like maybe saying that out loud, about the target number is 15, letting you guys know ahead of time. There's no reason not to, generally. No reason not to tell you the difficulty, and then that can make it a little more exciting when you know the number before you roll. I noticed that happens a lot on initiative rolls. Often I'll roll first and I'll say, okay, I got a 5. You got to get a 5 or better to beat me on initiative. And then when you do, everybody's excited.
I don't know if doing an episode after the episode, that's like the breakdown, would be helpful.
That's interesting.
You could do a breakdown of not just the system in play, but also like the beats of the story and how certain things were revealed in a way that then made people choose certain actions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, certainly Critical Role does that. They have a whole separate show called Tox Machina where every episode they review the previous episode of Critical Role. Oh, that's a whole other show.
It's not the whole show.
That might be a bit much. That might be a bit much for me. So I don't know, Fred, if you have any specific questions, or if anybody has any specific mechanical questions, please ask them, post them on my blog or post them in the comments of the video, post them in the chat. I would love to answer those questions. So please voice them. But again, To just go back to your initial high-level statement of, like, my hope is that the rules are so light and so out of the way that we can just sort of shove them to the side and really focus more on the story. Because I think that's what's going to be fun about watching the stream, I believe, is the ridiculous story that unfolds.
Yeah, a lot of it's not even stuff that comes out of a role. It's just, you know, I'm making a choice or a decision, and then my friend's coming along with me, you know, and you just throw a roadblock in. And eventually we'll get to a role, but in some cases there's no need for one, right? We're
creating the story ourselves. If you remember, there was a moment where I think Max was standing on top of the box, and then was it you? Two players, right, coordinated
jumped down with a hammer. I was hiding behind a box, so it was okay. Christian and Max's characters. Yeah.
So they coordinated, and I didn't ask them to roll any dice, because I was like, the two of you are like, ready, 1, 2, 3, go. It seemed reasonable you could get away with that, and so, yeah, that happens. You know, another fairly common thing in old school play of, I really encourage the players to, like, interact with the environment and come up with things that will work so that they don't have to roll dice is always better for you guys, like, Why risk something on a die roll if you can come up with some way? It's just obvious. It's sort of like the 10-pole thing, right? The 10-foot pole, right? So 10-foot pole, whole point is you're walking down a corridor, you're tapping with the 10-foot pole in front of you to try and detect pit traps. Yes, there's a roll I can make to try and find traps, but the pole should just obviate the need for that roll. If there's a trap and I poke it with a pole, it should open. No dice. No dice involved.
Yeah, so that's really interesting because I've run a bunch of games at different cons, and I've had different types of players who really just want to roll the dice, and some players who want to do this kind of method where they're kind of getting around the dice rolls.
Yep.
So I think it really depends on your player.
So Spacelem points out that a little bit of a concern that at the high levels, all those hit points might make the game feel a little less Warhammery because the players will be less squishy. Totally agree with that concern. When I wrote the system, I decided to cap it at level 10, but I definitely had a moment where I was like, maybe I should just cap this at 5. Maybe that's high enough. And in fact, Small But Vicious Dog, I think, caps it at 3, which is crazy. Honestly, second edition Warhammer has the same exact problem. That's one of my big gripes about second edition Warhammer is that by the time you get into like your third career, everybody has all these abilities, and the worst part is many of them counteract each other. So, for example, in second edition Warhammer, you start to get multiple attacks, and you also start to get the ability to parry attacks. So combat goes from a simple, I swing, did I hit, or did I miss, to I swing, I parry, okay, nothing happens. I swing again, okay, this time he dodges, okay, nothing happens. Okay, third try, okay, now you've hit. And like, oh, the game is so much slower because we have all these abilities that just counteract each other. Likewise, I'm sure Spacelem is right. Like when we get to higher levels with big hit points, then you know there's a chance that combat will start to slog because you'll go many rounds of taking hits and nobody dying. But there's an easy way for me as DM to counteract that and simply throw things at you that do a lot more damage.
Yay! Can't wait. Yeah.
And I think we're going to see that in general ramp, right? And that's true of the Enemy Within content, and true, I think, of how I imagine that this campaign will unfold. Is in the beginning you'll be facing. I mean, right now it's a bit ridiculous that you're facing a vampire because it's just ridiculous. But that's part of the fun. But like even right now, like a common street thug is probably going to be a challenge to you guys, and that'll be like you know a fun touchy like touch and go. Are they gonna survive? And then as the campaign unfolds, you'll worry less about thugs in the street and more about, like, you know, chaos worshipping cults and the demons that they are bringing into the world or whatever. So,
what?
Yeah. So I think we can counter it. So long story short, Spacelem, I think we can counteract the extra hit points by simply throwing more and more deadly things at our players. Though, like I said, this is the first playtest ever of these rules, so I might be wrong. We'll find out.
It'll be entertaining either way. Yeah, can't wait for that vampire.
The vampire is great. so a while back, I tried to run basically the same campaign just for a regular group, not streamed. It was when 4th edition Warhammer first came out, and I thought, I want to try it out, and I've heard The Enemy Within is fantastic, and I listened to the podcast version of The Enemy Within. I was like, I have to run this. And that group kind of fell apart due to logistical problems, so I think we maybe got 2 or 3 sessions in before it just stopped happening. But I had spent all this time and effort prepping it, which is why I proposed that we run that for this thing. I thought, that's one less roadblock for me to get a live stream out the door. I've already done all the prep work, so let's just go. So that's really nice that I can sort of draw on that stuff. Where was I going with that, Colleen?
You just started going, Paul. I'm sorry.
Oh, so to compare that campaign to this campaign, sorry, I'm getting a little rambly. In both of those campaigns, I had a first session where I pulled content from somewhere else just as a, let's get the players used to the system. And the funny thing is the group that did a podcast version of The Enemy Within did the exact same thing. And I think it's pretty wise, right? Throw the players a little something that just sort of gives them a taste of the world and a taste of the mechanics before you then dive headfirst into the like big story of the game. So I totally did that again here. Anybody who's read The Enemy Within is probably like, vampires? Where the hell did this come from? yeah, you're right. You're right. We haven't actually even gotten into The Enemy Within content yet. We will get there. That group also also ended up transporting a vampire. Although that group was all thieves. They were like all rogues, and they were super underhanded. And the whole thing was about like, how can we screw people over and make a buck?
I think that's a popular trope.
Yeah.
Because I also have a Monster of the Week game where you transport a vampire.
It's pretty funny. That other group opened the crate before they even left town. Like, they got the crate and they're like, let's see what's inside. In this one too, like your boat ride to Carrowburg is 2 weeks. And I was like, we've got 2 weeks to figure out this mystery. And you guys were like, day one, nope, open the crate.
Yeah, we're like, who's going to be Renfield? Let's do this. I like talking to flies.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, come on.
So should be good.
Someone has to open the box.
The pacing of the campaign is going to be an interesting one. I do still intend to break this show up into seasons. I don't think we've talked about that, but my goal is to break it apart into seasons, much like Wandering DMs is, so that we'll play for a season. We'll get to some natural conclusion point. We'll take a little break for a couple of weeks to recharge our batteries, and we'll come back and do it again. Maybe that breaks down on the content of The Enemy Within, which is like 5 books. So I don't know, maybe it conveniently breaks right at the book points. I don't know. I still have, honestly, actually even to figure out just how many episodes will be in the first season.
It's every Thursday.
Yeah, every Thursday. But so I guess viewers should expect that there will be an end to season one, and then there'll be a little break for a couple of weeks, and then there'll be a season two. But I don't know how far out that is yet.
What was the policy you came up with for someone who has to be absent, like who's sick or?
Oh right, yeah, that question was asked on our chat, and I'm going to use something that I used before. It's actually another Warhammer game I ran, where I just gave all my players the crutz, which is a disease, an unfortunate disease. I don't know if it'll be specifically the crutz, but you guys, basically, what I'll do is I'll say, what I did in that campaign was, the players, if a player was absent, that meant their crutz was flaring up, and they were basically incapacitated. They could kind of walk and stumble around, and that's about it, but their character felt miserable and needed help and needed guidance into sort of like where to go and what to do. So the other players then sort of had to like, oh, help our poor comrade, you know, shuffle between point A and point B, or like if we're on a boat, I guess our comrade is just, you know, laying in their hammock wishing they were dead. So that's what we're gonna do here too. If one of you guys is absent, we will just assume that you are ill, that your character is quite ill and would prefer to lay in bed all day if possible. And if they must be moved, they can stumble along and follow somebody around and sure do just want to get back to bed.
Well, it's good to have that policy as opposed to just like canceling the entire stream. I think it's important to come up with something like that.
I'm sure we will miss episodes of the stream if like two or more people are unavailable. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and roleplay with just you, Colleen. That's I don't know. Maybe we'll do that.
Oh, God. The inner thoughts of Yeffie. Tune in.
I don't know. Yeah, we'll figure that out as we go. Yeah. But I think, definitely having a policy. I agree with you. Having a policy is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can, with four players, that's a little small, right? So once you have more than one or two absences, it's overwhelming. But I think with one person absent, it shouldn't be a big deal.
Right.
Hopefully it doesn't come up too often. I hope you guys can easily make it. I mean, 2 hours and being able to call in from home, I think are both intended to make that easy.
Yeah, the remote ability of this game is pretty awesome. We have two players in New York. And everyone else is in Massachusetts.
Yep.
And then if one of us has to travel, we could still call in, which is pretty cool. I'm sure our relatives or our partners who are on vacation with us at the time won't like it, but
yeah.
That's one really cool part about doing this remotely, like doing a stream as opposed to table.
I think a fair number of people now just play that way regularly, and I think it's, you know, I don't know. I would prefer to have everyone in the room if I could, but... It's pretty close. It's pretty good.
Yeah. We only had one or two audio or visual issues or blips. I had actually forgotten to turn on my microphone, my real microphone. And so I hadn't realized that. And at one point I was like cutting out and I didn't realize it. Mm. And everyone was like, are you doing that on purpose or is that just Yeffie? And I was like, it's just Yeffie now. Yeffie's going to just be sporadic all over the place. This is how she talks right now, like this.
I mean... Tech is hard, right? Tech is hard. Like, there's always little gotchas. I screwed up at one point and accidentally flashed a window on the screen over your faces. We're figuring it out, though. And I think it'll get better and better as we go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. All right, Colleen. Any final thoughts on the show, on playing for a stream or 10 Dead Rats specifically?
I'm really excited about it. I can't wait to see where the story goes. I think it's really fun. I'm really looking forward to getting feedback from all the viewers as well and seeing how we can make this stream fun and entertaining for them.
Yeah.
That was my dog. My dog just came on screen.
Excellent.
But yeah, no, I'm just really excited. I hope everyone can tune in on Thursdays and watch us.
Yeah, I totally agree, honestly, that...
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, the general enthusiasm amongst all the players is fantastic. I'm very excited about it. I'm very excited about this as well. It's fun. I think our podcast listeners are like, what is going on? We have a visitor from Colleen's son on screen here, which is quite hilarious.
it's also a turtle.
Yeah, the enthusiasm level is super high. I always say that the best system is the one that the GM is excited to run. Not only do we have that, but we have four players who are all super, super excited to play the game. So I think it's going to be great.
It's going to be awesome.
All right.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Yeah. So, again, if you have any questions for us about 10 Dead Rats, any questions about the system or the stream or any comments for us, any feedback for us, we'd love to hear it. Please leave comments for us here in this video. We would love to hear from you. Please like, follow, subscribe to Wandering DMs. Both 10 Dead Rats and this show, Wandering DMs, are available on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and Twitch under the handle Wandering DMs. We also have audio-only podcast versions of the show available via our site, wanderingdms.com, as well as all your standard podcast carriers. If you're listening to this show on a podcast, please take a moment to rate and review us. That super helps us out and helps our audience find us. And lastly, thank you so much to all our patrons. There is special Wandering DMs patron-only content available on our Patreon. You can check it out at patreon.com/wanderingdms. We're live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Next week, we will be joined. Dan should be back, and we will be joined by special guest Steve McCauley, where we'll be talking about more about bringing old school concepts to your 5th edition game. So please come and join us for that. And until then, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.